Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Joining me up top, it's Justin Savakis.
Howdy.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Me too. Things are looking up.
Watching Loop Guru, apparently. Yeah.
We'll get to that. So not a whole lot in the news lately. Although we say that every week at this point.
Well, no giant scion of the entertainment industry has gone into complete free fall or closed.
Well, there you go. So I guess then that begs the question, have you watched anything lately?
Yeah, I have. I've been chugging my way through the Phoenix OAVs, Tezuka's, you know, Hinotori.
Mm-hmm.
I'd written about the movie that Rintaro did for Buried Treasure years ago, but I'd never gotten to the OVAs that were produced around the same time by Kyojiri. And they're pretty good. They're not great. They're, you know, Kawajiri, I think, is kind of overblown as an anime director.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like his art style, and I think it's a really interesting clash of art styles to see his very particular, hard-edged, very Japanese-looking characters by way of Tezuka. Which really just kind of ends up looking like softer-edged Kawajiri characters with it, and one of them has a big nose.
Uh-huh. When were these produced?
86.
86. And they were never made available here?
No.
Okay. How many different adaptations of Phoenix have there been? Because I'm very confused as to what you should watch, what's available.
There have been two movies, two OVAs, and a TV series. And none of them cover the same books.
None of them cover the same books. Any of them available here?
Just the TV series. Media Blasters put that out in a disastrous kind of collaboration with PBS that didn't pan out.
Okay. So probably a little tough to track down.
I think they're still in print, actually. But The dub was supervised by PBS, and the whole thing was a nightmare, apparently.
Okay. Wow.
We'll have to get Sir Nicholas on here at some point to talk about it.
Okay. Well, he's on the list.
Yep.
So are these good?
They're worth hunting down and definitely worth seeing at least once. The movie that Rintaro did in 86 is by far the best one. Mind you, I have not seen the Phoenix 2772 movie that was made even further back. But these are decent. The one Kawajiri one that's better than the other. Kawajiri didn't go full out he did two stories. One is space, the space story, and then there was another one that's more of a period piece. The space story is better, but most of it is a conversation between people floating in their escape capsules in space.
Riveting.
Yeah, it doesn't really make for the most high action stuff, but there's flashbacks. It's well done. It's just not all that memorable, really. Yeah, they're kind of okay. That's it, and it's all I've watched this week.
Okay. Oh, you know what? Before I get in, because I watched some stuff, but before I get into that, I did want to bring this up because we're both fans, but I am of mixed emotions on it. It was announced this week that they're yanking Community at the midseason, and everyone's of course making a big stink about it. I want to know how you feel about that.
I understand, but I'm unhappy.
Yeah, I feel like I'm less unhappy than I thought I would be. I like that show, but I do feel like it's getting a little stale.
It hasn't had a reason to exist in a while. I mean, over half of the episodes now are Power of Friendship episodes or just weird for the sake of weird.
Yeah, or let's be as meta as we possibly can.
Right.
And that's fine. But I feel like now that I've seen them do that so many times, I don't know.
They're out of tricks.
Yeah, I kind of feel like their bag of tricks is a little empty. And I was sort of hoping in season two, is when they started to kind of go down that road.
The ratings are so bad. They do worse than most cable most mainstream cable shows now.
Well, I mean, in compared to other NBC stuff, they are their lowest rated half hour. But that's not saying much. It being their lowest rated half hour means it's slightly lower rated than many of their other half hours.
Yeah, like they're a few decimal places away from Parks and Rec.
Right, which will stay on by virtue of, I don't know. But I'm very thankful for that. That show, if it were to go away, I would be very upset.
Yeah, I've really been getting into that.
Because it's still really good in season four, and I feel like they've... That's the rare sitcom where it's past its third season and it's still really, really good. I mean, that's really rare. That almost
NBC
never
has had a very, very, very rough fall. A
couple of years, decade.
Well,
maybe.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's been a bad several years, but this fall has been even worse than most.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. It's just I started out like with Community, like just loving the hell out of it, super fan, and then over time, I just kind of went, well. Three seasons, maybe a fourth, just to get them into syndication, and then let's put it out to pasture because we don't want it to get horrible. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess my reaction is kind of like, well, all right, well, I guess we'll see the rest of the season next summer.
That's what's going to happen because they haven't cut their episodes order at all.
No, they haven't. But they are replacing it with a Chelsea Handler sitcom, and I'm just not excited about that. I'm not a big fan of Chelsea Handler.
Yeah. Well, that's not what's going in the time slot, but...
Well, yeah. No, 30 Rock is, but that's what they're making room for.
Yeah.
And Whitney isn't going
away. And it's
going
to be multi-camera.
Oh, God. The laugh track, I hope.
Well, there's no other reason to do a multi-camera other than have a laugh track.
God. I mean, well, there are multi-cameras without laugh tracks. It's weird to watch, but they...
Law and Order.
Right, yeah. But no, I was curious if you were in the rabid, like, oh, I can't believe they're yanking it, or if you were more like me where it's like, well, I don't know. You know?
I'm more like you. I mean, that I love the show. I love the characters. I like what it tries to do, but I respect it more than I enjoy it these days.
Yeah, I think that's true. Although that Kiss from a Rose thing last week was pretty damn funny.
Yeah, I'll definitely give you that. Well, also, that was one of the few episodes that actually did something with the characters the last two seasons.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that season one was so strong and so interesting and so lovable, had so many really laugh-out-loud moments. It hasn't had that in a while.
You know what? The same thing got brought up on an AV Club podcast a while ago, where they were talking about how all these people were just dying for more Arrested Development. And me and other people I know who really loved that show don't want more of it, partially because in hindsight, looking back on that show... When it miraculously got renewed, it just continued. Instead of working on its characters, it's a great show. It's a classic. But instead of really working on its characters, it just got even more cartoony. And I feel like Community has gotten really cartoony. Like, to the point of ridiculousness in many instances.
Yeah, they're pretty much an inch from, you know, they killed Kenny sort of shtick.
Yeah. Almost, yeah. And while I'm okay with cartoony, week after week of that, just, I don't know. I don't know.
You have to do something with your characters. You have to have something progress. Otherwise, it gets boring.
Yeah. It stops feeling fresh.
Yeah. It starts being, you know, eighth season of Home Improvement.
Maybe second.
Where the formerly cute kids are now like these hideous, you know, monster-looking
teenagers.
Adults that
yeah, early 20s,
you would run from if you saw them in a dark alley.
Well, anyway, so there's that. And the thing that I watched two things. The first thing was that Professor Layton movie.
Oh, how was that?
You know what? It's fine. It's very much a children's film.
Well, now that they cut the rape scene.
Oh, did they?
Not kidding. There is no rape scene.
Solve the rape mystery, Professor Layton. Well, you know, the lead character is plucky little British boy who's, you know, his protege, and they solve mysteries. And yeah, I mean, at least, you know, there's an English dub and it's got some forced English accents on there and whatever. It was fine. Totally unobjectionable. I didn't get anything out of it. It, you know, they solve a mystery. on an opera cruise ship thing.
If it was the same dub that... Do you know if it was dubbed in the UK? Because I think Manga Video released it first.
You know what? I looked on the back of the DVD and there were no dub credits.
Yeah.
And I didn't check the credits at the end for the dub. I suppose I should. But it didn't. I didn't really recognize a lot of the voices, so maybe it is just that UK dub. I wouldn't be shocked.
I mean, you want UK voices, so yeah. It makes sense.
That's true. Although the voices are not particularly convincing, so to me they sounded like someone doing an accent. But who knows? At any rate, if you're
British people always sound like they're doing an accent.
Well, yeah. If you're a fan of those games, you will probably enjoy it. They literally introduce a plot element that allows the movie to be separated into numbered puzzles.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow, it really is for kids.
Yeah, it's for kids. It opens with the lead character bragging about the franchise's success. It's really weird. It's super weird. He's like, we've sold over 3 million of these games, and now for his next adventure. Like, really for really for kids.
That's a little
it's
meta.
Yeah, it's super. It's weird. I've never seen anything like that before in front of a movie. I have a feeling it was some weird theatrical thing or something that was made for like a press screening or something that they just threw in there, or I don't know. I can't explain it. But anyway, if you're a fan of the franchise, I'm sure you will enjoy the film. It is no more or less offensive or even memorable than your average like Detective Conan movie.
Gotcha.
So the other thing I watched is this Production IG movie that Sentai Filmworks put out. Which is apparently pronounced Lugaru.
Okay.
Which, to me, sounds like a Mazda dealer.
As opposed to Lupus Garris, which sounded like a disease.
Right. Come on down this weekend to Lugaru Mazda. Yeah, that's what comes to my mind. But anyway, so this is a movie that is, I guess, based on a light novel? Sure seems like it, because the writing's atrocious. Anyway, this movie is fucking terrible. I hated it. Boy, did I hate it. I'll set it up. So, future utopian society. All food is synthetic. You don't kill creatures or plants or anything to make food anymore. It's all made out of... It's made out of synthetic material. Everyone is being watched at all times by these monitors and these robot sentries. And there's, like, this school, and we follow these high school kids or middle school kids or whatever the fuck it is they're supposed to be. And they have these monitors at all times that are – they call them monitors, but it's like having, like, a little iPod or something that, you know, you basically see the world through this little monitor. And everybody lives in this utopia, and people don't really interact with the real world. They interact with each other through this little monitor. So, okay, allegory for modern times, all right? So it turns. So people start dying. Unregistered citizens start dying and going off the grid. And so this girl who doesn't have much of a personality starts to investigate. Meets a plucky cast of obnoxious anime stereotypes. Blonde tsundere type who's really into technology and yada yada.
Basically, the cast of Sakura Wars.
Sure. Well, maybe Sakura Wars through the lens of I don't know K-On. Girl in a Chinese dress who does martial arts.
I was actually going to ask if there was one of those.
Yep, there is. And mysterious boy who speaks in really obnoxious, cryptic dialogue and talks about how the world is meaningless, blah, blah, blah. So they start investigating and cut to the chase. Not all is right in this utopian society. And eventually it's established that this utopian society was put together by a World War II vet who discovered... the secret to making synthetic food, and then sort of locked society down because society had to be locked down in order to preserve the utopian ideals of not needing to have war and not needing to kill things and yada yada. So what they've basically set up here is kids need to break through hierarchy of the old guard and make their own future, right? So they're not trapped by this ideal that's not their own. They have to make their own way in the world. There's all this stuff about how they have to live, and at one, you know, the characters at one point are like walking down an abandoned highway and there's like ocean, and at one point the main character says like, we have to live enough for everybody, like god, it's so bad. Before I get to the big spoiler, because I am going to spoil the end of this movie, they shoehorned in a partnership with the band Scandal. So the blonde tech freak, for a class project, this is the excuse they're using. For a class project, pulls up this music video of Scandal that's animated so they look like the K-On! Girls. And her project is, we should all recreate the choreographed music for this pop song. Okay, so this is like, let's shoehorn in this shit that we know otaku like into this horrible light novel plot. So there's scenes of them practicing the dance. There's montages of the Scandal music when they're doing something. Towards the end, when they're raiding the, you know, the man's office, they're playing the pop song, and you're supposed to be all fired up while they're sticking it to the man and ripping out wires from computers and stuff. And okay, so spoiler, stop here if you don't want to know the incredibly dumbass end of this movie, but I thought it was just going to be, okay, kids rip down the old guard and create their own future. That's a pretty common thing. You see that right. In a lot of different stories. Here's where this one goes. So it turns out that this society is not being run by, like, the predecessor or some villainous, modern guy. The person behind it all is actually the World War II veteran who's managed to keep himself alive. And it turns out he's an Iwo Jima survivor who had to resort to cannibalism on the island. And his whole scheme is to create this utopian society and feed everybody synthetic food so that he can harvest their organs and recreate the taste of human flesh for himself.
What?
I'm not shitting you. That's where it goes. And,
oh my God.
So he's at the end, he's got all the four kids lined up in front of him. And he's like, oh, you've got a brash personality, and you've got a nice build. And then he comes to the main heroine, and he goes, oh, pure and untouched. I'll be harvesting your organs next. And then the mysterious kid, who the title of the film is based on the mysterious kid who turns out to be a killer and calls himself the Lugaru, which is, you know, monster wearing a human mask, just sticks a knife into his neck unceremoniously, cuts his throat, the end.
Wow.
It is a piece of shit.
Wow.
My God.
And since I dubbed this?
Oh, yeah, they dubbed it, and it's a fine. The dub's fine.
Put it out on Blu-ray?
They actually loaded the Blu-ray. There's a subtitled HD interviews with the cast, the director. They loaded it up. Like,
so they treated this like, you know, a Criterion.
Not quite, but close. Yeah, I mean, as much as you're ever going to get on an anime anything for extra features, this thing's loaded. But my God. Oh, and this is the thing that, like, within the first 10 minutes, I was already climbing up the walls. Because 90% of the dialogue is literally the super lazy, as you know, I am your mother, and we live in this society where things go this way. And then the person that they're talking to, it literally goes so far as where two people who already know everything talk to each other about everything that they already know. So it would be like if I was like, well, Justin, as you know, you're my co-host on this podcast, and we've been producing it since 2009. And you would say, yes, and we've produced episodes featuring such guests as, and it's only us two in the room. Like, that is what the dialogue is like. It is the laziest fucking, like, don't do exposition that way. Why is that okay? Did they not take a screenwriting class?
Literally the first thing you learn in screenwriting class.
One of the first things, yes, is don't do that. Because it's not the way people talk to each other.
And don't write stage direction that, you know, you can't display on screen.
Yeah, this is not the way people talk to each other. And that's why it seems so unnatural and so forced and so bad. Is because that's not how people talk. Oh, God. Oh, man.
They talk like that in the future, Zach.
Oh, well, yes. In this utopian society, everything needs to be re-explained. Oh, and they do the thing where character moments need to be re-explained to you. So, like, the lead character is trepidatious and timid and doesn't want to go into this adventure. But, you know, there's a moment where she's, like, she's got to take a step forward and confront something. And it literally flashes back to a couple of minutes before. Of a character giving her a reason to motivate herself to go forward. And it does that a couple of times. And they'll restate character motivation over and over again. It's just, oh, man.
Who is the audience for this?
I don't know. I guess, you know, fans of the light novel. I mean, if they liked that, if the light novel story is anything like this, okay, some people like that kind of thing, but whatever, man. It's a very poorly written movie. Like, I kind of couldn't believe how bad the writing was.
Stuff like this always reminds me that anime is just so cheap to make that if you sell 2,000 or 3,000 copies on DVD in Japan, you've broken even.
Yeah.
And that's the whole business model.
I mean, you know, it's Production IG. The animation's not bad. The character designs are super generic. And actually, the whole look of it is very generic. There's nothing memorable about the way it looks. And, you know, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't even know. I can't explain it. All I know is, it just, yeah, avoid.
Yeah.
So, anyway, yeah, all right. Oh, a couple of business notes before we get on to the interview here. So, this week is, obviously, this show. Next week, we're doing another game show. That'll be with me and Todd from the X Button and then Dave and Joel from Fast Karate. And then the following week, we have scheduled our Funimation episode. So, you can send in your questions now, Zach@AnimeNewsNetwork.com. I'll make an announcement over Twitter. But Monday after Thanksgiving, we'll be doing the recording, and then we'll release the episode that week. So that's going to happen. We've got the Funimation show locked down, so look forward to that.
Woohoo!
Okay, well, we should go ahead and get to the interview.
Anime is straight from Japan. Totally unexpected, not kid stuff. Anime is on right now, 24 hours a day. Log on now and demand your anime. Anime Network.
Okay, we're back. My very special guest this week is the Executive Vice President of the Anime Network, Stacey Dodson. Stacey, thanks
Hi.
For coming on. We really appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. And sitting with Stacey is the social media manager, Christian Lopez.
Hey, guys.
So let's start from the beginning. When did you guys, Stacey specifically, when did you get involved with the Anime Network?
I started in about 2003, right after the Anime Network started rolling out on video on demand.
Okay, so you've been there since the beginning.
Yes, I've been there pretty close to the beginning.
And how did you come to that job? Were you an anime fan? What was your experience with anime before getting involved?
Well, you know, we're based out of Houston, Texas. I went to University of Houston, and I have a degree in radio and television. And I knew several of the people here through just the local industry that were working on the DVD side. And they thought of me when, you know, the position was being filled for producer on just some elements and basically the look and feel for the linear channel. And they thought of me, and my friends gave me a call, and I came in and interviewed, and I got the job. And I'm still here today.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool for, you know, the congratulations, I guess, on maintaining a stable career. That's
in the anime business, no
yeah,
less.
In the anime business,
yeah.
That's impressive. I mean, just in terms of the anime itself, I mean, did you start watching it? How did you approach the material?
Honestly, I didn't really know. I knew basics of anime, but I wasn't into it like as detailed as, you know, the company and all the shows that they put out. I knew the basics like Robotech and Speed Racer and all that stuff. But yeah, so along the way, I've seen a lot of anime.
I'm sort of digging, like, how do you feel about it? Like, is it just work for you? Have you become a fan?
I'm a fan of certain shows, but I mean, as you guys know, when it comes down to it, you have to separate things like that and get your job done. I've got to get my work done at the end of the day. I'd rather sit around and watch TV all day, but I can't do that.
I like
certain shows. We were talking about that earlier. Of course, my new favorite, and I think it'll probably be my favorite forever, is High School of the Dead. But
really?
I'm also a zombie fan. I'm sitting next to a big Walking Dead poster right now. You can't see, and Shaun of the Dead postcard. So
there you go. So when you started with the network, this was back when it was still ADV.
Yes.
And what was the atmosphere in the company like at that time, 2003? This was during the bubble, pretty much.
Right. Well, believe it or not, we are and still, you know, we were very different. When I got hired, I was specifically hired for Anime Network. And yes, you know, ADV was the production company and the licensing company that got all the shows, and Anime Network was the network. And so I worked with the people, but very different company and very different department. So, but what was you know, what was it like? I guess it was crazy at the time. I was a little overwhelmed with how popular it was, and it only gets more and more popular. The conventions I go to every year, it's more people. So yeah, there was definitely a obviously in the DVD side of things, there was a downside, and the bubble deflated a little. But as far as the television network goes, you know, we didn't lose any viewers.
I was just going to say, if you could talk a little bit about the logistics of just doing cable VOD off the bat like that and trying to transition to linear channel. That must have been very, very tough.
Well, at the time, though, you know, VOD was a new television medium or a new way to deliver the content to the viewer. So it was actually a learning experience. I knew about linear channel, so that wasn't, it was more comfortable for me to help build the linear channel than to do the VOD. But for the most part, it was more natural for me to help with the linear channel because I was familiar with that. But along the way, obviously VOD has been the big success for us.
When did that become apparent that you needed to sort of shift your focus from the linear channel to VOD?
I guess it was about 2005. And it was 2005 when we really started focusing on subscription on demand. A lot of the on-demand that we had done was free, and Cablevision was the first company that said, hey, let's do subscription, and it was very successful. So what we were able to do is transition giving everybody a little bit of content into giving them a lot of content for a small monthly fee.
Right, and obviously the approaches have changed over the years as the business has sort of evolved. So it's 2005, you've decided let's switch over to VOD. What was successful on the network at that point? What were your top shows that were getting the most attention on the VOD network?
In 2005?
Yeah, right.
You're asking me to remember far back. I just remember another favorite of mine that I always like, Elf and Lead, was huge at the time. And I think that was about 2005. And so, you know, lots of shows with fighting and action are always the big sellers.
So action and comedy were, you know, the two things that people seem to gravitate towards, at least on the VOD side.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially action. That's just, you know, that's who wants to watch boring television, right?
I guess so. Was there any, would you know of any correlation between what was successful on VOD and what was successful on DVD?
I would say it's fairly similar. I mean, I would imagine, it's very different. The anime thing is very different because with regular, you know, like American television, you have your theatrical release and then you have your television premiere for television series. And then from there, the DVD comes out and you do the, you know, maybe like the pay-per-view and things like that afterwards. But with anime, it's very simultaneous, or sometimes, you know, Anime Network will premiere something, but the DVD comes out shortly after that. So usually the sales correlate very well. Like if it's a high performing show on Anime Network, I would imagine it's a top seller on DVD. But, you know, that is some information you probably have to get from Sentai or right. Other, you know, licensing companies.
And, you know, as the company changed, you know, when ADV, you know, split itself up and all these little other companies, and started calling itself something else. What was that transition period like for you?
Again, I know you guys, I've been heckled before, but it really was separate. Anime Network did not change. It just kept, everything kept going in the same direction that we were heading in. And we came into work every day and functioned just like we always did.
You didn't move at all?
Nope.
Huh. Okay. So I imagine you get pressed on that a lot. Like a lot of people,
because
Section 23 does not talk to really anyone, except they'll answer questions at convention panels. So they're pretty tight-lipped. Right. You guys are a lot more, I don't know, accessible, or, you know, you do convention panels and stuff. You talk on Twitter. I would imagine you get a lot of kind of obnoxious questions about the former ADV, current Sentai, that you straight up just can't or won't answer.
Right. I mean, I for the most part, can't. It's a different business. It's a different business model. And like I said, I've only been with the network. So that's my area of expertise. Ask me anything about that.
So what's the reality of the network right now? What's your big focus right now?
You know, it's always TV. Anime Network is the baby, and it's the, you know, basically the business model. But as you know, we've started the Anime Network online service as well. And we're just going to sort of transition with basically everybody else the way the industry is growing. We're always into trying new things. So we've got our app that we've released out there, and we've got a new version coming out of it that you'll be able to pretty much, it's going to be more player-based, more based rather than off the website than actually the, you know, the content and the subscription. And we're really excited about that. And hopefully we're working on this. This will be a little, you know, exclusive for you guys or whatever. But hopefully in the first part, you'll be able to sign in through your cable provider login. And if you have a subscription to the on-demand on TV, you'll be able to watch it through your iPad app.
Oh, cool.
So you're kind of doing the HBO Go sort of thing.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Just similar to the HBO Go app, which is fantastic. Do you have that app?
Not on Time Warner Cable.
I'm sure you will soon. I don't know for a fact, but everybody's getting it, so
I hope so. But that's cool. So obviously you watch the market and you pay attention to what other companies are doing. And when something seems like it's working, you start applying it to the Anime Network. Are there any approaches in the past that you took that didn't pan out? Any ideas that just didn't quite work out for you?
Well, I mean, blatantly obvious, the linear channel.
Yeah.
I mean,
starting a linear channel in the mid-aughts is a rough go of things. I know that one from experience.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I remember working with you at, what was it, Imagination?
Yes. The less said about them, the better.
Okay. We had booths next to each other at the big cable conventions. I remember that.
Yes.
So, and it's not that it was a, I mean, if you were one of the lucky ones to have it, then it was an amazing channel. I mean, I think that by far our graphics beat out everybody. We had some very talented people that worked on the graphics, and you know, we had a lot of, we got to work with a lot of Japanese musicians and just had some, I don't know, it was a great network. But at that time, you know, companies were full. There was just tons of channels like there are now, and so it wasn't that easy to launch a linear channel. But we did have some success, but at the, you know, at that time we just decided, why not focus where we are growing quickly and put our efforts into that.
And you don't have to pay $20,000 a month for satellite uplink.
I cannot comment on that.
At any rate, so that you mentioned, you were talking about your branding and graphics. Could you just talk a little bit about the efforts you put behind? Because you guys have always had really splashy, really interesting looking graphics. I think most fans have seen them from ADV's DVD releases, but pretty much anywhere, they're very attention grabbing. What's the creative process like for them? How do you come up with ideas? What is the end goal? Are you trying to reach fans? Are you trying to reach new people, etc.?
I'd like to take all the credit, but I cannot. I'd like to take any credit, but I cannot. We just have some really talented people that work, you know, for the network, in you know, contractors that we know, and then also working with some of the ADR directors that, you know, work with Sentai, and they just have some great ideas. And of course, our end goal is to get to the consumer, but at the same time, you know, we want to, it's just fun. I mean, we want to, when at the end of the day, you know, it's animation, we're happy, fun company. And so we want to be fun. You know, we're not, it's not a life or death situation at the end of the day. We actually have a nice job that we want to come into and enjoy. So why not make our graphics and our, you know, our network look fun?
So fun and accessible are the key words there.
I could say it a few more times. No, yeah.
So the I think one of the biggest benefits of being on anime, being on a cable system versus being on an internet website that you have to actively go to, or being on a DVD that you have to buy first, is the fact that you can reach more fringe audience members who maybe aren't as into anime.
Right.
What have you seen any any feedback from people that, you know, maybe have gotten introduced to anime through your network?
Have I heard of any feedback or seen any results? Let me think. Basically, we saw a surge, of course, when we simulcast last year High School of the Dead, because a zombie title is definitely a crossover genre. Right. And it also correlated at the same time when Walking Dead started. So it was really good timing for us to release a show like that and for Japan to come out with a show like that. So we saw a lot of hits on demand and on the website at the point where you know that it's outside of your regular anime fans. Word of mouth is out there. You know, it's growing. And a lot of that audience stayed. So, like, by looking at analytics, we introduced people to anime, and they're hanging around. So shows like that are definitely a big help into reaching out into other spaces. And then, of course, we recently have Persona 4, and that being a gaming show, that's going to branch out and reach different audiences as well.
Are you noticing a shift towards the website over cable VOD, or is it staying pretty much the same?
It's evident, like when you look at what's going on now in the industry, that people still want to watch TV on their TV. While, you know, it's great to have all this content accessible and on the website, I mean, look at all the products that are actually coming out, like the Roku boxes or AirPlay with, you know, Apple TV. They know that their audience, while it's great, you want to watch it online, on the go, you're still, at the end of the day, you want to come home, put your feet up and watch TV, you know, watch your content on your TV. So I think that TV is definitely still stronger, but it's growing. The streaming business is definitely growing.
To that end, are you working on getting on Roku or any of the other set-top boxes?
Yes, we're definitely looking into it. So, we are on Apple TV right now. And the app that we're releasing that's coming out very soon will have AirPlay functionality.
Awesome. So about... What is the split between internet and cable viewers that you've seen? Is it like 50-50 or it's definitely more cable?
Oh, yeah, it's more cable. I don't have exact numbers in front of me.
Okay.
All right. To talk a little bit about the streaming. The way you guys announce the titles that you're streaming, it's a little interesting because basically Sentai, sometimes it goes the other way. You guys announce that you're going to simulcast something and then they announce they're going to do it on DVD. Sometimes they announce a DVD, then you announce you're going to do a simulcast. Those decisions are obviously made on a show-by-show basis, but, is there a particular way you prefer to make those announcements, and what kind of a selection process is there when you're deciding on a show?
I guess there's really not any kind of pattern on releasing it. It's just when, you know, on who does what and who does the press release. We work with Sentai. They work with a lot of other people. So if we get it and we want to announce it, then we announce it. It's just there really is no process behind that. Maybe there should be. I'll look into that.
What have we done?
I know. And then as far as streaming, you know, and what we want to get in, you know, what we're looking at is, we just follow what Japan's doing and whatever the hot new titles are coming out that we definitely want to have, you know, have a simulcast or, you know, I think that, and, you know, you guys know this from your side of the things, but I mean, the simulcast I think is a way that's going to end up, you know, helping with the illegal fan subbing and things like that. Because why would you spend all the effort to go do it yourself when you can just watch it on our site, right? Legitimately. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that still want, you know, to be legit.
Right.
Right.
I suppose that's true, but, you know, the reality of the streaming business is, and this is sort of my next question about this, is that it's generally not a profitable business to be in. Is that the case for you? Is it working out financially, the streaming service? Or do you see it like a lot of other people do, which is just a promotional device for the cable VOD, or for obviously Sentai sees it as a promotional device for their DVD sales. But how does streaming fit into your business model right now?
Well, again, I say that Anime Network is the TV side of things is the main focus of our business, but the streaming is growing. And how does it fit? I guess it fits like sort of we're a little backwards because we don't have the linear channel and then the on demand to catch up. So we have the on demand as our primary, and the streaming is also a way for the viewer to go catch up on any episodes they may have missed on demand. So that is one of the, the great things about having the streaming site. Plus, you have more space. We have longer shelf life. We can keep titles up for the whole license period, rather than, with on cable, you have limitations and bandwidth issues. So,
right. But in terms of the streaming, actually bringing a profit into the company, is that happening? Is it an expense at this point?
Well, that I can't answer those kind of things, right? It's like me asking you how you guys are doing.
Well, we would answer you.
What?
We would answer you.
You would?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's turn this around. I'm sure all the viewers want to hear this too. No. It's it works. It all works collectively as a business unit because, once we get the app in place, it all ties it together. Like the app is going to tie the television network to the streaming. And so, yes. Is it a promotional tool? Yes, definitely. It definitely is a marketing tool. And that's what all websites started out as. And then as we grew, we put more content on it. But it itself is, look at sites like Hulu. That's all they do. And things are working out for them. So,
well, to an extent, the reason I bring this up is because, as Justin knows, there's a lot of questions right now about the profitable future of streaming. And so that's why I bring that up. Even Hulu's have their share of problems. That's why I asked that question is whether
Okay.
or not, if you see a future for it, do you think that is the future? Do you eventually see going all streaming and eliminating the VOD? Where do you think the future is?
Oh no. That goes back to what I said. It's like at the end of the day, people want to watch TV. Don't you?
Yeah, and no, I hate watching stuff on my computer monitor. I prefer to watch stuff on my TV.
I built a computer for my TV.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm not a psychic, but I don't see the network going anywhere anytime, going away anytime soon. But again, I'm not psychic, so.
Was there ever a time where things were seriously in question, between the transition from the linear channel or when it was clear the linear channel wasn't working out?
No, but yeah, when shutting the linear channel down was more of a, it was a business decision at the time, but it was a little sad, we really loved it and it was great. But that, other than that, on a, on a personal level, it was sad, because we worked really hard, but on a business side of things, it's a business decision and you have to make those on a daily basis. So.
Right. And obviously doing that meant you could stay in business.
Yes.
Rather than keeping that thing alive. If you had another crack at it, would you even attempt it again?
Oh, I'd love it.
Yeah.
That was fun. It was a lot of work, and but it was, watching it, watching the feed and our cool graphics and everything, it was fun.
Did right. you guys do Master Control in-house? Did you actually build out all that?
No. We built out everything, and we did all the trafficking out of house, but, we had a uplink service through through a provider.
Right. Okay. So at least you didn't have to go in for the several million dollars of new equipment.
I guess I can't answer any of those financial questions.
We figured that out.
Yes.
You've made it very clear.
Let's talk anime. No.
Justin has talked at length about how much work doing simulcasting is. And I'm curious, I have no idea the size of the Anime Network, how many people you have working there, but how much is it a tremendous burden to have to handle the simulcasts?
It's not a burden. It takes different pieces, of course, to make it happen, but it really isn't a burden. It's the only thing is as you know, with anything that is, it has to be done at a certain time. There's that element of pressure. So if one little thing goes wrong, you have to manage your time. But other than that, I don't think it's a burden. We prefer when they're on the weekdays rather than the weekends, but, you know, you do what you can, right?
So you sort of cross your fingers every time there's a new season that yeah. you're not picking up any Saturday shows.
Yeah. Please be a Wednesday.
Have there been any issues with you guys with getting materials late or there being some technical foul-up?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's technology. So, you know, we use Aspera and every now and then something will crash. But for the most part, it's pretty smooth.
That's good. Are you guys handling subtitle production or is that all Sentai?
That's all Sentai.
So you don't have to worry about all the endless proofreading and all that good stuff?
No. Thank goodness.
But you do get to deal with fans, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, we have our own, you know, where people say thank goodness. But yeah, no.
Well, and to wit, like, what has it been like for you interacting with the fans? I mean, that's sort of a trial by fire for anybody coming into the anime industry. And obviously, you've been doing this for a very long time. But what has your experience with the fans been like?
We're a fickle bunch, we are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Put yourself in it. Great. Well, I just hope that I answer everybody's question and, you know, that I can help people out, you know, because, you know, when it comes down to it, I am the business side of things. I can't help them say, oh, okay, I talked to this creator and I'll put in a good word for you guys with trying to get this new season or, you know, I mean, you know, I just hope that I can help answer the questions. But it actually helps me to interact with the fans because then, you know, you figure out what your audience wants. And of course you want to give your consumer what they want. So I take back any feedback I get and apply it to what I can do here.
Right. So no horror stories of fans overreacting or a particular time when you were like, geez, I wish I didn't have to deal with these people.
No, but one time someone asked me for my autograph and I thought that was awesome. I was like, I'm nobody. This will never sell on eBay, I promise.
So obviously High School of the Dead is your biggest hit.
It was our biggest hit so far this year, yeah. But we had some other great titles. Angel Beats turned out to be really great.
Yeah, what else has turned out to be really, really big for you guys? Angel Beats and anything else?
Well, I'm excited about Persona 4 because the simulcast numbers have been incredible. So I cannot wait to get, you know, to where we get that out onto VOD. VOD is such a, you know, longer turnaround time, so it's easier to get the website show on the website before we get it on the television. So
how far in advance do you have to get something to the cable operators before it goes up?
Well, we have to deliver schedules, but most, you know, channels do this is no different. 45 days about, you know, almost 2 months out. And then we have about 3 to 4 weeks where we need to deliver in advance. And a lot of that is because of just quality. You know, they want to make sure that the content is in, you know, is the best quality for their customer.
But that means simulcasting on VOD is outright impossible.
At this point in time, but I see it getting quicker and quicker all the time with digital delivery now being the way it is. I think that, you know, I'm predicting in a year we'll have a much shorter time for delivery.
Were you guys always sending them MPEGs or is it, were you guys like FedExing them digibetas at first?
No, our production side of things, the ones that I guess now they're called Seraphim, they do a really great job and they compress video for all different kinds of formats.
Right. Those totally separate, unrelated companies.
Yes. But, you know, it's a company that we use to compress our video.
All right. Okay. So we got some questions from your fans on Twitter. All right. Nana K fan asks, are you planning on overhauling the site? I found it to be very buggy.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, next question.
Can I give one word answers to all of them? No.
So yes, a redesign of the site is coming.
Yes. Okay. Hopefully, first quarter 2012. We're hoping for that.
Cool. We've sort of talked about this a little bit, but Wraithnor asks, are there any intentions to license Anime Network content to other distributors like Netflix or Hulu?
You have a few things on Hulu, right?
Yeah, we have a few things on Hulu, and we've actually been working with them on a couple simulcasts. I don't know if you guys saw that, like where, you know, Persona 4 being one of them. It's Hulu gets it the next day, and then I think Fibrain, right? It's one of them that goes on the next day. So yeah, we like working with Hulu. Those are great guys and girls.
All right.
And they only get like a couple episodes of most stuff, right?
Right. Just right now. Yeah, we're working on delivering more, but at first it was mainly catalog, but now we're working with them on simulcasts.
Okay. TMS IDR asks, are there any plans to offer streaming to other regions like Europe, not only the UK or, you know, other English-speaking countries?
For the most part, we only get rights for, or we only license rights for North America. And that being because it's, you know, we're anime network. We only have cable, you know, we only work with cable providers in US and Canada. So at this point in time, no. But, you know, does Anime Network want to grow into other countries? Always. We want to do takeover. But at this point, we have no plans.
All right. Land of Upseason asks, if you're still looking into teaming with other companies for streaming, like previous teamings with Illumitune and Enoki Films USA.
Oh, wait. Sorry. Could you ask the question again?
Yeah. Basically, I guess previously you streamed content from Illumitune and Enoki Films. And he wants to know if you'd ever consider doing that again with other companies aside from, you know, Sentai or whatever.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I'm hoping to be able to have some stuff for 2012.
And hopefully with companies that will exist 3 months later.
Yes, before the world ends in 2012.
I was referring to Illumitune.
I know, but don't forget, next year's a short year.
Right.
Sewing Rose 11 asks, what was your most inexplicable hit? So, like, something where you saw it personally and said, like, wow, who is this for? And then it turned out to be a big smash.
Oh, what is something that was a big hit that we didn't expect it to be?
Yeah.
I guess is the question. It's not that we didn't expect it. We don't ever go out and say, you know, this isn't going to be any good. No, but Infinite Stratos, you know, we were really, we knew it was a pretty good show, but the numbers showed that it was a great show.
Okay. Ted of Warner asks, sort of an obvious answer, but why was the Anime Network's 24-hour channel only shown on smaller cable companies and not larger ones?
Yeah, we tried. It's not, we got an A for effort, right? No, just, it was the industry at the time.
All right. Okay, well, that actually wraps it up. Thanks for coming on and chatting with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for interviewing me, and let's see how well it goes over.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Stacey and Christian for coming on by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at thenewdivision.net. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, and while you're there, leave us a little rating or review. We'd appreciate it, and see you all next week.